Tired of spills and stains on your sofa? WashableSofas.com has your back. Featuring the Anabe Collection, the only designer sofa that's machine washable inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly prices. That's right, sofas start at just $699. Enjoy a no-risk experience with pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and changeable slipcovers made with performance fabrics. Experience cloud-like comfort with high-resilience foam that's hypoallergenic and never needs fluffing. The sturdy steel frame ensures longevity, and the modular pieces can be rearranged anytime. Check out WashableSofas.com and get up to 60% off your Anabe sofa, backed by a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not absolutely in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping or restocking fees. Every penny back. Upgrade now at WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Do you love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts. Love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.
Today on The Dark Side of, we dive into the A&E docuseries Secrets of Playboy and break down some of the biggest bombshells about Hugh Hefner's empire. Lots of shocking accusations being made on it. We'll find out who they're from and exactly what they involve. Today on The Dark Side of...
Sometimes the human mind goes to dark places. Sometimes those dark delusions turn into a reality. A reality so shaded and gray, once all is said and done, the healthy mind is drawn into the documented retelling of these tragic events, trying to find logic, reason, and understanding where there may be none at all. This is The Dark Side of.
That indeed it is. Welcome to the program. If you like the show, check out our Patreon page. Go to patreon.com or download the Patreon app. Search Dark Side of or go to darksidepod.com. Get advanced episodes of the show as well as them all being commercial free. So you like the show, listen to it with no ads. Patreon.com. Search Dark Side of or go to darksidepod.com. And be sure to press subscribe, whatever platform it is you're listening to us on, so you don't miss any episodes. Oh, the program. New ones every Monday, Tuesday, and Friday. It's Tony and Sean with you on today's episode of the show. What's going on?
I was watching television last night, and not on DVR, actual television.
Mm-hmm.
And the commercials came on.
Yeah.
And I had like a small panic attack. Like, there's no way to fast forward through these.
It is kind of weird now. Like, I can't.
There's no countdown in the bottom right corner that said skip ads.
Yeah.
Or 5, 4, 3, 2.
Do you have them now, like sometimes on the on-demand where it's participate in the ad? Basically, like you choose the ad and then there's another thing you click on and then it's like no ad break. It's just like 30 seconds, but you have to like interact with it. It's, it is weird because I never watch anything, I guess, live anymore unless it's, I don't know, like the Super Bowl, I think. That's probably like roughly about it. And it is strange to have that. But yeah, I mean, it's nice that you can fast forward on, you know, virtually everything. And just get rid of them.
Do you believe the next generation of adults will not be as well, lucky as I guess everyone else, what would you say the age gap is? Because obviously there's conversation, there's memories, there's one-liners of, obviously Nike and Just Do It is an example that comes to mind, or maybe the McDonald's jingle. But with the lack of commercials, or we consume content in ways now that we don't, we basically navigate the commercials and go around them. There are good commercials, but there's no situations that, short of going on YouTube or going to the commercial channel, that you can then consume them enough to bring them up in conversation when you're getting water in the staff kitchen.
I think we're getting actually more commercials than ever in our lives. We're just getting them in different ways. And I think they're actually getting more effective and more impactful than before. Because a lot of times you have a commercial break, you really wouldn't pay much attention to it. Now it's like the pre-roll that you can't get in front of in a YouTube. And if you're going to watch a bunch of YouTube and you don't have like the premium, you're going to see the same ad, 30 times in like 2 hours. That's gold to an advertiser. And you can be super targeted with the stuff now where you're seeing it, but your neighbor probably is not, because the ad is so targeted down to your interest, not theirs, that you can get to the right people and you're going to be more impacted. It doesn't mean that mass amounts of people are going to see the same ads anymore, but they're going to be more effective because they're more targeted to an individual.
And then when you really think about it, super creepy.
It is. And then they're interwoven into places, not as obvious ads anymore. They're just kind of everywhere. So many ads are like entertainment. We have ads on these shows that are woven into the content. It's pretty obvious when it is, if I'm talking about something, but the only ads I take that I talk about are things that I actually like too. So I'm not just talking about things that are like, I'm just saying it to say it. They have more of a personal strength to them than they had in the past. Then it's just some random voice you're hearing talking about something. So it's
funny you say that, Tony, as I take a drink of my smart water. Smart water. Hydration. I apologize. You were saying? It makes sense. It was more hitting you over the head with a frying pan commercial back in the day when you couldn't control. And now, as you said, there could be four houses in a row, four apartments in a row, all watching Netflix, all watching the same show, and they get four different commercials.
Yep. So in a way, we don't consume the pan over the head type commercials as much as we used to, but we consume them it used to be like just loads of them at a time. We consume them in more sporadic areas, but it's far more frequent than it used to be.
Speaking of which, did you see that new Tide spot of the gerbil getting hit over the head with a frying pan?
That was great. And you can totally get the blood out of the whites that the gerbil is smashed on.
Well, it was a stain killer, absolutely. The gerbil was killed, and then the stain was killed.
So if you ever happen to squish a gerbil with your white shirt, now you know, Tide. It's
the end of our first story today.
It gets the gerbil out. That'd be a great slogan for something. It gets the gerbil out. Let's go to our first story as we jump into this. And a lot of it, we're going to focus on this new Hugh Hefner and Playboy documentary that's going on in A&E, which I think it was only a matter of time before somebody jumped into this in the world that we live in today of calling out, inappropriate behavior, things that were once kind of glorified and like, oh, this is pretty awesome and amazing. And it's like, I don't know that we have the same lens of that today. Hugh Hefner's Playboy Empire, this story comes from People, by the way, is under renewed scrutiny each Monday as A&E's 10-part docuseries Secrets of Playboy examines the illusion of sexual freedom Hefner meticulously crafted over decades across his magazine, an international network of Playboy Club lounges, a still-thriving merchandise arm, and more. According to Hefner, in an archival interview played in episode 1, much of what Playboy is all about really is Disneyland for adults, a projection of those adolescent dreams and fantasies that I had grown up with that I never really lost. Now, a number of people immediately involved with Playboy have stepped forward to shatter the brand's illusion, re-examine the toxicity those fantasies perpetrated, and cast light on the darkness underpinning the brand facade of glamour. Former employees, bunnies from the Playboy clubs, Prime and even Hefner's ex Holly Madison have all shared shocking claims about not only the Playboy Enterprise, but also about Hefner, who died in 2017 at the age of 91. The series contains allegations of wrongdoing over decades by Hugh Hefner and others associated with him, reads a statement at the end of each episode of Secrets of Playboy. The vast majority of allegations have not been the subject of criminal investigations or charges, and they do not constitute proof of guilt. Below, and what we're going to go into, is a rundown of the allegations made against Hefner and Playboy, and check back over the next couple of weeks as this docuseries continues on. We're going to go start with episode 3 and kind of move on from there through some of the claims that that we have here. Again, these are a series of allegations of wrongdoing over decades, it's a vast majority of allegations have not been the subject of criminal investigations or charges and do not constitute proof of guilt. And we are not saying they do either. So interesting. I should text Bridget and see what her thoughts are on this, Marquardt, because she was one of the girls next door, and she's been on the Ghost show quite a bit.
And let's get her on the phone.
She's in California right now, and then we'd be waking her up if we called her.
Morning.
Morning. Hey, what do you think? But she's always been really positive about it. We did a whole episode about the mansion and the ghosts of it on the Grave Talks, but we never got into any of this. But she's always seemed very, I don't know, from my vibes of what she said, she seemed very positive, but I don't know. I don't believe she's in this series. I think it's just Holly that's in it. But anyway, let's go to the claim here from episode 3. In the 10 years that I worked for Playboy, I would venture to say that there were probably 40 to 50 young women that were silenced by Playboy because of abuse, sexual abuse. It was a big thing for Hefner to not have that kind of heat and did not want the LAPD coming down on it. That's said by PJ Maston, who worked in Playboy in 6 Playboy clubs across the country from 72 to 82, including as a bunny mother who trained new Playboy club hires starting in 1976. Another claim by Maston, 2 young bunnies were at the Soul Train host Don Cornelius's house, and they were separated. One was locked in one room and the other was in another room. They were tied up and bound, and the sister could hear her screaming. There were wooden objects that were used for sodomizing with, and she could hear the other sister being brutalized. Maston said it, who also dated Playboy security head Joe Pistero during her tenure with the company. Cornelius's son, Tony Cornelius, told People in part that Maston's account is unbelievable, an unbelievable story without real proof and salacious. You know, if you're the son of him, I think, yeah, you would certainly not want to believe such a thing. And yes, we are just relying on accounts from people at this point. But I don't know. I mean, what are your thoughts on this when stories like this come up? I mean, it's an obscure name at this point in time. Not a lot of people are going to recognize who Don Cornelius is. And I guess to say it now, is there a reason other than just trying to get, you know, the real story out? What are your thoughts?
I think it is TBD, the best way to describe it. To be determined in the shock, awe, hey, I have an interesting nugget. Hey, can I monetize this? Hey, is this a common enough known person? And also, is there not a lot of news going on right now? Can I drop this bombshell? So what we know is obviously this was a glorified mansion location, physical structure, where you're not going there to pick up your dry cleaning. You're going to a house that essentially involves a magazine of nudity. So you already know there, you're essentially going to a nightclub.
Yeah.
So it's not as though we're talking about something that happened at a public library. And if such salacious rumors were spread, oh my gosh, how could that happen there? He went there to get his car washed and he got something else washed involuntarily. Forced is what I was trying to say. So I think it's really, you can have as many examples or make a case that it actually did occur and they're trying to play damage control, or hey, someone's just trying to take a snippet of truth, exaggerating the hell out of it. And, you know, family members now need to fight to clear the name of somebody that has passed on.
It's interesting because what I think a lot of people fail to realize is the lens at the time in which these things happen. And in no way is that an excuse for anything to have happened, but the way society viewed these things at that time, it was very much brushed off when the mansion was active. I mean, I don't know if everybody had this, or many people just kind of had this view of like, oh, it's just a bunch of rich people going to hang out with women in bikinis at a pool, and it's all just clean and lovely, you know. Or I mean, you got to think here. You're talking the 1970s, 1980s, into the 90s, and earlier on, you're talking like the Mad Men era, you know, almost of the look and the under or the treatment of women, which was, you know, very chauvinistic, very controlling. And, you know, you basically have a business that takes women in simply to subject, you know, them to these men. I don't see anything wrong with that, Tony.
Sounds like a real nasty Friday night.
It's just like, how do we not assume that shit like this would have been going down? I mean, it's not that it's right in any stretch of the imagination, but you get a bunch of drunk, powerful men together amongst scantily clad or naked women. It's probably not going to be a good thing. And it's not, you know, not that, again, none of it's right, but it's just like you're setting up this fucking bomb. You know, you put all the ingredients in here and it just needs to be lit. And I can imagine many a times a lighter was flung and it, you know, horrible shit happened. And he probably had the power, as we're probably learning here in this documentary, to, you know, there was another time where a lot of this could be squashed and the information wouldn't get out. Until, you know, all these years later and he's dead. And now we're like, oh, we never had any idea. Like, I don't know about that. A group of bunnies from the Playboy Club located in Great George, New Jersey, were drugged and they were raped and videotaped. They were kept for a couple of days and they were released. They were told if they told anybody, the videos would go out and broadcast the videos and their career would be over and their lives would be over. This is from Susan Charnesky, a Great George bunny from 79 to 82. Another claim, this is from Manston, who had some earlier. If you didn't get your weight down for next month, you were suspended until you got your weight down. A lot of girls had kidney infections because you were cinched in. We used to go into the ladies' room, take our shoes off, which were encrusted with blood, and stick them in the toilet bowl and keep flushing with like a whirlpool to get the swelling down, hoping that your shoes could fit back in. Manston, whose painful memories of the bunny costume were echoed by Charnesky and Susan Singer, who worked for the Playboy Club in Century City, California from 72 to 84. That's episode 3. So, I mean, you thinking you take a look at those outfits that they were wearing, the ones where they really did cinch them in. It does not look comfortable.
You know, I was on a honor flight with my dad back in November and went past the Arlington Tomb of the Unknown Soldier.
Yeah.
Or and I apologize, the official naming of that. It's just absolutely tremendous. Found out that the service members that are selected to be a part, because there's always someone walking back and forth.
Yeah.
They wear pants that are like three sizes too small.
Oh my God.
To be as proper, you know, your, what am I even trying to say here? Your posture, I should say.
Okay.
Just to be that. The posture so in proper form to conduct that. And it's crazy, in the winter months they go 2 hours, in the summer months they go a half hour, because obviously it's a lot warmer. So I bring that up, you bring up the scantily clad women wearing vices on their body that are a bit too small. Guess what? It's not just happening at the Playboy Mansion.
Yeah.
It is happening in our capital.
It's a bit of a different comparison, but yeah, uncomfortable, yes. I can't imagine. I mean, hell, because I fluctuate in weight, I think, throughout the year, like three different size zones I go back and forth from. And if I try to put on something that's like one size too small, I'm like, I give up. I can't imagine like being forced into it and then like having to wear it for a long period of time. Because
Well, it's funny. I put pants on the other day for the first time since 1996. And let me tell you, it was... I felt like I was in a foreign country.
With you, they probably fit because you're like, you've kept yourself very trim.
You know, this is for another show, but I think the last couple of years, there's a fork in the road. And there that fork has about 18 different roads. excuse me, that was not said at all. Essentially, there's many ways that things could go over the last two years. And, you know, for me, when all of us had so much time to do nothing, guess what? Going outside and there's roads and you have shoes and you can move.
Yeah.
So that's what I did.
Yeah.
Without the pants, because I only put a pair on the other day. So it's funny that I'm not coming to you from inside a prison cell.
That's true. That you could have easily made it to one of these episodes.
No, officer, I'm doing the... It's called a podcast.
Yes,
I'm using the prison's Wi-Fi. Just 15 minutes, please.
Or if they arrest you when you're not wearing pants in public, you'd be like, this is show prep. I'm this.
If
is
I drop out here, I can't reset because my hands are in cuffs, so I can't reach the button on the computer.
Holly Madison had quite a few accusations, and we'll go through some of these. This is from the second episode of the series. She says, I was sitting next to Half. He leaned over and asked me if I wanted to take a Quaalude. I said something like, no, I don't do drugs. And he goes, yeah, I typically don't either, but they used to call these thigh openers in the 70s. Sex with Hafner was all very mechanical and robotic. It was really gross to me how Half didn't want to use protection. The impact it had on me was so heavy, I never expected it to be the first person to have sex with that night or pushed into it. Holly Madison was one of Hafner's multiple girlfriends from 2001 to 2008. Now, the claim, she says, the reason that I think the mansion was very cult-like is because we were all kind of there to and expected to think of Half like this really good guy. And you started to feel like, oh, he's not what they say in the media. He's just a nice man, she continued. Another thing that reminds me of a cult is how he was so easy to get isolated from the outside world there. You had a 9 o'clock curfew. You were encouraged not to have friends over. You weren't really allowed to leave unless it was a family holiday. Madison said this as well. Another claim that she made, Hafner felt more in control if we all looked identical. That's interesting because when it was the girls next door, they very much looked very similar. I got a point not too far from my time there. I think it was like 6 months in where I had kind of broke under that pressure and was being made to feel like I needed to look exactly like everybody else. My hair was really long naturally, and it was just like, I'm going to chop my hair off so I can at least look a little different. I came back with short hair, and he flipped out on me. And he was screaming at me and said it made me look old, hard, and cheap. Who said it? Of course, Madison again, whose increasingly tense dynamic with Hafner, including when she allegedly got called a cunt, which was corroborated by Girls Next Door co-star Bridget. Oh, so Bridget did weigh in on this a little bit. Claim from Madison, when I lived in the mansion, I was afraid to leave, something that was always lingering in the back of my mind. I think since the very beginning was that if I left there, it was just a mountain of revenge porn just waiting to come out. When you go out with Hef, he's taking all kinds of naked pictures of these women. When you're wasted out of your minds, and he would print out like 8 copies for him and all the women, you pass them around, it was just gross. Madison, who first spoke out about her past relationship in her 2015 book, Down the Rabbit Hole, Curious Adventures and Cautionary Tales of the Former Playboy Bunny. So she's quite vocal on all of this after, you know, being very much involved with him, you know, and that E! Television series. And what was portrayed there was very much, this is, you know, all fun and games.
Yeah, I think that there's so much that goes on that, as you said, back in a time where I don't really care about the aftermath. I don't really care what you don't like or the whole experience. This is fun. He's the man in charge. And as you said, just the shift of a lot of stuff back in the day and just one of the boys, and that's kind of how it is. Society as a whole has shifted. So, yes, there was the huge moving of mountains of stuff that never should have happened to begin with when it comes to what men did, what women didn't do, what men didn't do. And now we're kind of in that next wave of, okay, some stuff that just shouldn't happen anytime. Not only back then or now or anytime. The head of the Playboy empire. Yeah, let's kind of dive deep in that. And that's why I believe more is coming out now and why it didn't come back then.
Well, it's really interesting to, I guess, with age comes perspective. Because when we were kids in the 80s and 90s, Playboy was a very, like...
very enjoyable.
Well, it was looked at like it was a brand and
a nipple.
And how many girls that we grew up with in high school had a Playboy tattoo or the tan thing that they would wear? It was glorified. It was marketed to young girls as this is great. This is, you know, sexy. This is this or that. And of course, as guys were like, yeah, boobs, you know, if that's what you're into. And when we were younger, we were innocent about it. But at the same point, there was no parental figures going and saying, this is not something like to be glorified or to be proud of. It was like, yeah, Hugh Hefner, he's the guy with all the ladies and this and that. You know, it was just kind of like, it was, I don't know, it was looked at in such a different way. Not okay by any means. I always found it kind of creepy and weird that it was just kind of like, this is just kind of like, he's got this kind of like thing, like, today, you know, we look at R. Kelly had fewer women and look at him. And of course, horrible human being. But if you look at the way things happened at the fucking Playboy Mansion, it almost kind of blows that shit out of the water.
Yeah, I think it's just a situation where, and again, all this information is just coming out. To your point, Playboy was a brand,
yeah.
No different than ESPN or an experience.
It was normalized, too.
I mean, you know, when you think of Las Vegas, you basically know going to Las Vegas that you're going to do some things that you should probably never speak of.
Yeah.
Clearly, we're not talking about on the level of law enforcement needing to be involved or varying levels of how legal said acts were, but this is just a situation where it wasn't necessarily covered up or just looked the other way. But because the advertising and marketing was so great, where there was professional athletes that would be interviewed in Playboy magazine,
yeah,
and it wouldn't be a fluff piece. I mean, similar to when you see
it was like Rolling Stone,
outlets,
yeah.
It, exactly. And it was, there was some actual, you know, legitimate reporters who would interview whoever. And if you're in Playboy, I mean, that is something you, in those situations, and it's very hard to understand, a magazine that has nudity in it, the number one reason you get it is not to see the nudity. There was, it was just an aura and a vibe. Didn't hurt that there were boobs and such.
Mm-hmm.
But I think so much of that was occurring that all the other side pieces that were happening throughout that brand and at that physical mansion, nobody really cared about it because it was, you were part of the brand, you were part of it. And I would imagine perhaps, as you said, age, as you grow and learn and look back, perhaps some of the stuff that was happening to some of these people back in it, they kind of played the pro-con of, okay, well, do I report it now and lose my spot in this empire, yeah, or do I just kind of roll with it? And now fast forward,
that's a cult.
X amount of years.
I mean, if you're fearing leaving, if you're fearing repercussions to get out of something like that, that's a cult. If it affects your entire life, and it was like it was in plain fucking sight. And everybody was just like, well, I mean, not everyone, but there was society as a whole was just like, OK, I mean, I understand how Playboy can operate as a magazine today and a brand today. But I don't know. I don't think that the mansion could operate today if it, you know, if Hef was still around. I think we're in a place in time where that would just not be OK. Now it is just this image of this brand.
The grotto, yeah. And all of the Fred Durst stories and such, that would not happen.
Yeah. When I was talking to Bridget on the show about a month or two ago, she was telling me that the mansion, it's been purchased since. It's no longer the Playboy Mansion, and it's been gutted. Like, they've ripped everything out. You can't even recognize it anymore.
Let's be honest. If you're at a highway side Super 8, and there's a party in room, 212, you don't want to be the next guests in 212. Imagine that in I have no idea. Yeah. 6,000 square foot mansion.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're going to rip the carpet out.
I think you'd be doing a lot of, yeah. Let's continue with the claims as we go to episode one of the show. This is claims from Stephen Tenenbaum, Hefner's valet from 78 to 81, says Hugh Hefner was in his own world. If you look at photos, he thought he was the king, the emperor. We were just servants. Everybody else was invisible. He didn't want to know us. He just gave us directions. We had to memorize them. He drank around 35, 40 Pepsis a day. Wow. I had to wrap them in a special red napkin according to the instruction. He ate mostly M&Ms, 2 or 3 pounds a day in red licorice. His condoms were stacked in a certain place. In the headboard, there were 150 rules. We had to follow them exactly. We were told, you cannot talk to the girls. You are not their friend. You don't work for the girls. You work for Mr. Hefner. Jennifer Sanger, who grew up in the Playboy Mansion because her father, Dr. Mark Sanger, was Hefner's primary physician, Sanger claimed she got her first plastic surgery at age 15. Says, I didn't realize what was going on at the time, that Playboy really wasn't about freedom of expression. This wasn't about, like, female empowerment. This was something was much deeper, that was much more sinister. I was allowed to sit with the men. I would see the men looking at different negatives of girls from different shoots. They would sort of quiz me on how to critique a girl that would consider up to their standards. And so if I would rattle off what I knew they were looking for, what a woman's entire physique should look like, and what size everything should be. For sure, I was size 0. I was trained to view women in the same way. Jennifer Sanger also said, as I got older, I would be creeped out, or I'd creep out of my bedroom more and more. I was just very curious what was happening in all the bedrooms down the hall. I would see some of the girls around them. I would see them on the floor on all fours. They were on drugs, and just really, it scared me. The men were laughing, and I just remember thinking, I never want to be like these girls running around. They're like animals. This wasn't about the empowerment of women. This was the breaking down of a woman. And that's always kind of what my view was on it when, I don't know, I've always, like, been more, I guess, prudish with this sort of stuff. I don't like the exploitation of it. And I always kind of felt, especially when we were younger and, 16, 17, 18, 19, and the girls were doing the Playboy thing. And it's like, oh, it's empowering. It's this or that. It's like, no, it just tells, the guy down there that the kind of the dope one that you keep getting into, he wants to take those down because the tattoos were always just a little bit below the waistline where you just could kind of see like the ears and then, oh, you want to see that? And it's like, what are we doing? What's going on here?
When you were reading that, I was thinking, boy, I'm going to tune into that after school special.
It wasn't. I'm all about empowerment for women, but I've always felt like this was not empowering for women. This was somebody that was, making that claim and enough people believed it. And the brand was saying this is empowering. And when you're young and impressionable, you can easily believe those sort of things. It's not until you get older, you kind of go, oh, really? This is just a creepy man that was trying to get young women to take their clothes off and calling it empowerment.
And, of course, none of those exist in current day.
Well, obviously they do, but it's just interesting to look back at the one that was, you know, sitting in plain daylight all the time.
I think there's a certain amount of prestige and allure associated with, again, it's not right, it's not justified.
Yeah.
But when you think of Hugh Hefner,
yeah.
I mean, again, I'm not, and we're both in harmony here, where there's a lot of shit that happened and still happens. That, guess what? It just shouldn't. It has nothing to do with sexuality. It has nothing to do with preference, this, that, or the other. Females are put into some shitty situations.
Mm-hmm.
With that being said, there is so much of memories, and whether it's celebrityhood or this, that, or the other. Yes, we want to make sure everything is proper and equal and this, that, or the other. There's some situations that this connected to this connected to this, aka Playboy, that, guess what? There's going to be some shit that goes down.
Yeah.
So we're finding out about that, and I really don't think that there's a, well, this could have been an HR corporate
at the time. I don't think it could have been. I think, you know, this is how this operated. There was no stepping in. There wasn't enough of any sort of movement or anything to change any of this stuff at that point in time. Had this been going on today, yeah, I probably wouldn't fly at all. But back in that point in time, if you were the woman who went and tried to complain about this, you would have your life ruined and it would not end well. And you didn't have many choices. That's why I don't know. It was such a predatory type thing that was marketed as empowerment. And I don't know. Especially even more as a dad now of a little girl, it makes you even more just, you know, sick to your stomach about, you know, this sort of shit. You know, like To Catch a Predator, and this was just like, you know, To Catch a Predator is like fucking Disneyland. Another claim that came out, it was cult-like. This is from Mickey Garcia, playmate and head of promotions from 73 to 82. It was cult-like. The women had been groomed and led to believe they were part of a family, and really did believe he owned these women. He had playmates. We had playmates that overdosed. There were playmates that committed suicide. I really thought that if I wrote a book, maybe all this stuff would go away. Maybe it would stop. Hefner even sent someone to buy me off. When you get someone that powerful to be that fearful, anything could happen. Anything. I had a bodyguard and I was afraid. Claims also backed up by Tenenbaum and Singer based on their experiences writing Playboy tell-alls. In a statement just before the docuseries premiere, the current leadership of Playboy denounced Hefner's alleged abhorrent actions and detailed a commitment to positive change under new leadership. First and foremost, we want to say we trust and validate women and their stories, and we strongly support the individuals who have come forward to share their experiences, the statement read. As a brand with sex positivity at its core, we believe safety, security, and accountability are paramount, and anything less is inexcusable. The statement also noted that today's Playboy is not Hugh Hefner's Playboy, with the Playboy Group leadership team reassuring staff that the Hefner family is no longer associated with Playboy, which is now made up of more than 80% female employees.
Today's cult is not yesterday's cult. You have your own glamping. Nobody's going to sleep in a tent in this cult. You're going to have your own studio with kitchenette and own branding equipment, where you'll be the one to self-torture yourself, not us.
Are we in a place where, you know, like, look, the damage has already been done. This shit was representative of this and really will always be to a certain extent. We can change, you know, we can put a jacket on the chicken, but the chicken is still a chicken, whether you put a jacket on it or not. It's, I don't know how I came up with that one. That's, I guess, living on a farm and I put jackets on chickens. Isn't it at a time where, like, Playboy is just, it's done? Shouldn't this brand just be retired and just be a relic of the past?
And you put jackets on chickens?
All the time. Jean jackets, leather jackets. I have won some that, yeah, they really get into leather. It's weird.
Heard the other day, a chicken is just a nervous bird.
That can't fly, really. They're smart as hell, though. I've discovered that. They're very smart animals. Like, they will follow you around. They know what's going on. They can tell if you're close by. They're little dinosaurs. But anyway. I don't know. But do you think the brand should just be dead at this point? I mean...
Oh, it should be. I think it's just, it basically, I would imagine there's, a small percent of wanting to honor Hugh Hefner's legacy, taking out the whole negative part. But quite honestly,
like most of it.
It comes down to, hey, if you can make money on this brand still, we're not going to close up shop before we can, you know, make a few more $1 million.
And you're right. That's why it's still going, because of money. It just seems...
Now, and just to clarify here, not minimizing the negative and atrocious allegations that have occurred, but Playboy is not exclusive to a tarnished brand or entity that continues on when in the world of morals should close up shop.
Oh, no, there's plenty. I'm just saying something that markets itself as like this innocent, empowering thing. That really is really much darker than it, you know, truly is. There's clearly plenty of, you know, places out there where there's far worse things going on. They're not marketed. They never had been marketed as like, oh, this is empowering and smart. You know, Pornhub does not market itself as like empowering and smart for women. I mean, it clearly is not. So... things like Playboy that did, it's just kind of like the bait and switch. It's the guise of, you know, we have this and this is good. This is positive. While behind the curtain, all this dark shit is going down. And it's like, ultimately it's a vehicle for the dark shit for a small group of men.
Not good. There's no argument. It's just going to be interesting how this plays out and what is proven. And then the allure and the hearsay of, stories from yesteryear that never can be proven. But, you know, to kind of put a bow on this, all the people that are still alive that were affected that didn't take their life, you know, that they can find some solace in the blanket being pulled off. And hey, there was some, in addition to the really, really crazy shit that was happening, there was actually like crazy shit that was borderline illegal.
Or was,
and we're not talking about
illegal.
The drugs, and we're not talking about this, like, next level illegal of, you know, people are killing themselves because they had to go through the torture that they did. So,
yeah, I mean, it wasn't even like questionably or borderline. It was flat out illegal. I don't think it's a far stretch, honestly, to say that this series could take down Playboy. A&E's R. Kelly Surviving R. Kelly took down R. Kelly. I could see
it. Did it also take down the hotels and the motels, Holiday Inns?
Anything he was associated with, basically, everyone had to really apologize and be like, we want nothing to do with this guy. That's where I'm wondering, depending on the gravity of what comes out in this, if this could do it. I think there's potential. Interesting.
It's trouble. It's funny, the day that R. Kelly's conviction... you know, I was trying to start my card. My ignition was having trouble firing.
Mm-hmm.
When starting up the ignition,
that's why you needed the remix.
That's what it was.
Yeah, you just gotta, you know, lay him down with a little sample of the remix. You know, that's all you gotta do. All right, that's gonna wrap up today's episode of The Dark Side. We'll be following this as the series continues to come out over the next handful of weeks. If you like the show, keep us on the air. Become a Dark Sider. Get access to advanced episodes and more at patreon.com. Search Dark Side Of or go to darksidepod.com. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. Until next time, for Sean, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to another episode of The Dark Side Of.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Life's messy. We're talking spills, stains, pets, and kids. But with Anabay, you never have to stress about messes again. At washablesofas.com, discover Anabay sofas, the only fully machine washable sofas inside and out, starting at just $699. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, that means fewer stains and more peace of mind. Designed for real life, our sofas feature changeable fabric covers, allowing you to refresh your style anytime. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa effortlessly. Perfect for cozy apartments or spacious homes. Plus, they're earth-friendly and built to last. That's why over 200,000 happy customers have made the switch. Upgrade your space today. Visit washablesofas.com now and bring home a sofa made for life. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Do you love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.
Life's messy. We're talking spills, stains, pets, and kids. But with Anabay, you never have to stress about messes again. At washablesofas.com, discover Anabay sofas, the only fully machine washable sofas inside and out, starting at just $699. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, that means fewer stains and more peace of mind. Designed for real life, our sofas feature changeable fabric covers, allowing you to refresh your style anytime. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa effortlessly. Perfect for cozy apartments or spacious homes. Plus, they're earth-friendly and built to last. That's why over 200,000 happy customers have made the switch. Upgrade your space today. Visit washablesofas.com now and bring home a sofa made for life. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Do you love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.